Welcome to The Balance. My name is Catlin Tucker, and today I get to chat with Alice Keeler. Alice is a globally respected leader in edtech, a Google developer expert, Google certified innovator, and author of 7 books, including The 50 Things You Can Do with Google Classroom. She creates and codes time-saving solutions for teachers and is widely and affectionately known as the queen of spreadsheets. And I have had the good fortune of knowing Alice for the better part of 2 decades. So very excited to have this conversation. All right. Well, I am super excited to have you with me, Alice. And the first thing I ask everyone is just to tell us a little bit about your journey in education, where you started, what you're up to now.
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, I didn't want to teach. I had to promise that I wouldn't teach in order to pass the teacher intro to teaching course. I had gone and done some observations of math teachers and where they're handing out worksheets and complaining about they don't want a new book because they'd have to write new tests. And I'm like, I don't really feel like this is my passion. I was going to go make some real money and be an actuary. My degree's in statistics. And so I literally got into teaching for the money. I was working at a bank for one day, and Clovis High School called me and said, "Hey, Alice, would you come in for a job interview tomorrow? Would you mind filling out an application?" So I'm like, part-time minimum wage, full-time with benefits. Yep. So thought that would just be temporary while I was taking the actuary exams, but I really enjoyed it. My first day teaching, now mind you, I have zero teaching classes, zero, right? Because I wasn't going to teach. Mm-hmm. They gave me the students who didn't know how to add, and they're writing 420 all over the boards. And I'm like, how cute, they're using numbers. literally that naive, you know? But at the end of every day, I ask myself, well, do my students love math today? No, then I should do something different. Mm-hmm. So my whole journey has been trying something else. How do I engage students? How do I help them to actually love math and have build number sense? And I will tell you, one of my most pivotal moments towards in my journey of where I am today, mm-hmm. is I was at Chewanake High School, and I was at an ed tech conference, and I went into this session, and there is this presenter who was presenting over Skype.
Yeah.
And they were so engaging, like the best presenter at the whole conference was doing it remotely.
Wow.
That was you, Catlin.
What?
Yes.
Stop it. You just let me right into that.
No, but it's a true story. I kid you not.
Oh my gosh.
First, like, teacher conference I had ever been at. So I'm just like going to these sessions. And I think you were supposed to be there in person. But for whatever reason, you couldn't be there. And so you were Skyping in. So it was, this is 20 years ago.
Oh my gosh. It was so long ago.
So long ago, because, okay, I started teaching in 1999. So it wasn't too long after that. So I'm at this conference. You couldn't show up. So they're going to Skype you in. And it was honestly life-changing. To this day, I talk about this session. If you want to talk about somebody who just gets it with how to engage the audience when you can't even see them, there was no camera at us. I mean, this is 20-something years ago. You know, that was so pivotal for me just to really understand how to interact with people and present and thinking about, you know, that teaching itself is really exciting. Like that can be engaging, is having those conversations that we get past, not just, I mean, you weren't talking about here's how to use Skype. That wasn't mm-hmm. even the point. I think this whole Skype thing was an accident. I mean, you're talking about students.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have a passion for students. Isn't that really what drives us? What gets me up in the morning isn't money anymore.
Right.
First, doing it for the money. That faded pretty quickly. I do it for the aha moments, right? It's that constant iteration that's not working. And so when you get something to work, you know, that's when you want to keep coming back. So I have been teaching in the classroom since 1999. In 2012, I had some health complications with my pregnancy of 5 children.
Mm-hmm. I do know this about you. I remember seeing you present days away from having your, no, it was W.
And right. then you said, and I'll be back at this other thing that was happening in like 3 weeks. And everybody's like, Alice, there's no way you can come back. You're going to have just had a baby. And you were presenting with that like newborn tucked under your arm, just like totally like owning the show and not, and nobody could believe it. Nobody could believe it.
No, I totally remember that because I was due July 24th and I was in Monterey at the Q conference in Monterey. That's where you saw me.
Yep.
And you know what? I just wasn't feeling very good that day.
So and I'm crazy. Like,
I just don't feel good. But my plan was to give birth after the conference. All right. Yeah. But that didn't work out so much. So I wasn't feeling good at the conference that you mentioned. And a few days later, I did give birth. So he was born July 31st. And then that conference was the 6th, 7th, and 8th of October. Not October, August. August.
I was going to say that was a newborn.
Literally a few days later. So I had a brand newborn. He was not even a week old. And that was also in Shawanakee. Although that one was at the Minarets school.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw up all over me while I was pretty sure that I didn't miss a beat. I'm just kind of like brushing the puke off. It's like, he was presenting on Canvas.
That is Moodle. So funny.
Moodle. I was presenting on Moodle. I totally remember that.
Oh my gosh. Moodle. There's a blast from the past. Oh, yeah, I remember.
The university I teach at right now still uses it.
Yeah. I've worked with a few districts that still use it as well. I remember us doing that online discussion. I had that course and that's where I remember us connecting. And even that was in 2008, 2009. So we've known each other for quite a stretch now. Yeah. And it was funny, everybody listening. So I got this text from Alice, I want to say 6 weeks ago, and she was telling me about a student who had kind of designed a lesson and that this person thought it was super engaging and actually referenced my work. And Alice texted me and said, oh my gosh, you'll never believe. And so she's telling me this story. Which ultimately was around kind of like the challenges of student engagement. How do we make lessons and learning experiences engaging? So I'm curious, like, how do you help teachers understand student engagement? What do you think they can do to design these experiences to truly kind of hook learners, get them excited, help them see the relevance of this learning?
I feel like student engagement is kind of like porn, you know it when you see it. And then that's a line from the Supreme Court, right? You know, that's what I always thought about. It's like, how can you, like, I shouldn't have to teach you about student engagement. Like, how, you can tell they're engaged or not, but actually it's really, really complex and hard. I've been working on a book on student engagement. It should come out in a few months. Okay. I co-authored it with Heather Lyon, who has written two books already on student engagement. Now, this one's obviously more googly focused because that's what I do. But, you know, through this process and really digging down into what makes something engaging and working with some teachers around, I'm super into the 5E's lesson plan model. Mm-hmm. Engage, explore, explain comes third. You know, starting a lesson with students doing the talking and students doing the thinking. And as I've been helping teachers with how to use this 5E's lesson plan model, I realize it is not like porn. You know, it's so, I mean, how many times have you thought this is going to be so awesome? The students are really going to be into it. And it just falls flat on your face.
Oh my gosh. Most of my lessons, the first 5 years of teaching.
Still. So, you know, when I lost my thought.
So you're using the 5E's with teachers.
5E's also my model, but yeah, whatever. Anyway, trying to help teachers with how to do this is just, it's a challenge because we have been doing school for so long. In fact, a lot of us, we love school so much, we just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and things that we found engaging, I think what's really hard is to realize that our students are not us. Oh, now I remember what I was going to say. While I have been teaching high school all of this time, I also have been teaching in the teacher credential program at Fresno State, at Fresno Pacific University, and just doing teacher training in general. And, you know, through that, just really realizing that student engagement, like when you plan your lesson plans, it's not a gimme. You know, you're focusing on, okay, I'm doing the quadratic formula. You are thinking about the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about the standard as the first thing you're thinking about, you're probably going to fail. So I had some of my students from Fresno State. They came in like, Ms. Keeler, we did a fake Facebook activity and the students did not like it. I'm like, well, you know what? Kudos to you for trying, you know, putting yourself out there. But Facebook is for moms.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they're not using Facebook anymore.
Right. You know, thank goodness I'm not 14. You know, I look at my own children, their range is from 10 to 19. And I just constantly like roll my eyes. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, first mm-hmm. of all, why are all these holes in your pants?
Alice. You sound like my dad.
And I, we have a rule. You can have holes in your pants, but you have to earn them. We don't buy them that way.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I know. If I see my kids take another photo of like their hair or the ceiling or something random to post on Snapchat, I'm going to scream. I'm like, I don't understand this phenomenon that now we just take pictures of like ourselves or not even ourselves, of like a random object in our room and we share it with people. Like, that sounds awful to me.
Well, nobody has to wonder if I'm going hungry if you look at my Facebook. So, you know, but we're not 14 and we're not cool. You know how not cool we are? We went into teaching, you know, like
right.
this is a more nerdy, I love to learn, I like to read kind of thing. And I have half an MBA. I dropped out because I got pregnant with my first child and I was really morning sickness. But one of the things I learned in that program was one of the biggest mistakes of business owners is thinking that your customers are like you. You know, and so when we design lessons around what engaged us or what was done to us, there's a good chance that will fail with a lot of students. I mean, we also have a very diverse group of people sitting in front of us. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do that's going to engage everybody? Probably nothing. I remember one time my friend, she got dinged on her evaluation. Now, mind you, she was teaching math. And she was teaching math to kids who had failed and failed and failed math. And it's like their last ditch effort to get a diploma. So if you can imagine the challenge to engaging students in this class. And he dinged her because two students were not paying attention. That sounds like a win to me.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like the like win with all caps.
Where's the confetti? What? Since when is this gold standard that every single student is going to be engaged in what you're doing? Like, I feel like differentiation is a word you can spell, but what the heck actually is it? Like student engagement, differentiation. There's a lot of buzzwords that we throw around. Like we just assume you know how to do it. Mm-hmm. If you just differentiate them, if you just build relationships, you know, focus on engagement. Exactly. How do you do any of that? Yeah. Are you crazy? I was looking in a administrator Facebook group the other day, and an administrator was concerned that some of the teachers are using ChatGPT to give feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that the problem? Exactly how many hours? Now, my husband teaches English. He had 140 students. There's some easy math on this. How long would it take you to give feedback on 140 essays? And I know a lot of English teachers have more than 140 students.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
What level of quality of feedback you think they're going to be able to give without robots?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and the reality is too, that like a tool like this is so robust, not only should teachers be using it, because now I think what ends up happening is feedback is so time consuming to give that teachers scoop up literal digital work. They take it into their evenings and weekends when they should be resting, relaxing, connecting with family and friends, doing what they need to fill their bucket. And it's like, here you have this tool that can help you give focused, actionable feedback very quickly. And a tool that, quite frankly, we should be teaching students how to use for that exact purpose, is my feeling. Like, if we're pulling the feedback loops into the classroom, why not teach students how to do that? Because now they have unlimited access to feedback anytime they need it. So I totally agree. Actually, ChatGPT was something I wanted to ask you about. So I'm glad you brought that up.
I am writing a book with my husband right now. He's, like I said, he's an English teacher. So it's how English teachers can deal with ChatGPT.
Oh, so very cool.
Lots of opinions on this.
Yeah. Oh no. Me and Katie Novak and I just finished, it's in the editing stage, a book that's all about shifting writing in the classroom. Yeah. And the whole impetus of it was ChatGPT. And like, maybe if we weren't sending writing home with kids that they're not invested or interested in, and we're asking them to do it after long days at school, let's not be surprised if they lean on tools like ChatGPT just to get through it, because most people want the shortest, you know, the way from point A to point B when it comes to something they're not excited about. But if we were actually pulling all parts of the writing process into the classroom, supporting and scaffolding it, really engaging students in the process from the beginning of like creating their own personalized writing prompts through the feedback process, self-assessment, like it could be so incredibly powerful. But I am also encountering a lot of more fear-based knee-jerk reactions of let's just block it. We don't want to deal with
And they should be like, where exactly do you get training on something that literally just existed last week? I mean, like, and where do you have all this time to learn how to completely reshift the types of questions that you ask? Like, this is not an easy ask. And so I don't have any negative opinions about like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this? It literally, it's like being pushed off the edge of a cliff again, after you're just barely recovering from being pushed off the edge of a cliff. You know, we had obviously the pandemic where we just said, hey, you haven't had any training in how to engage students in digital materials or online, which is hard.
Yes.
Which is hard. Even if you did have training, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, okay, we're getting some students back. Ah, just kidding. Now they're all just copying it off of ChatGPT. And you're like, I'm exhausted. Like, can I just have like one moment to breathe and to like just feel like I'm building on something I've been doing instead of starting completely from scratch? So I understand. I understand. But that's where, you know, like you and me and some other people who are investing their time in trying to create resources like your books. I literally was doing for Corwin. They're like, hey, will you review some books? Mm-hmm. I said, I'll review some books, but you have to give me some Catelyn Tucker books. So I have like this huge stash. I had this huge stash of Tucker books that I would just give away to people. And I'm like, here, you need this. You know, it's so transformational in helping people to really understand that as we have Chromebooks and as we use digital materials, you know, to really focus on thinking about how students are interacting and being active engagement and not just transferring their activities online. If you're taking a paper task and putting it online, I guarantee you it will fail. Mm-hmm. It just is not designed to engage with a digital. It's just not the medium. So one of my favorite examples is to talk about Joe Bowler. Like
I know, me too. I love her.
Yeah. And so she has a whole bunch of books, but a series of books are Big Ideas for Math. So I was on a plane to Spain in the rain, and my plan was to take these big ideas for fourth grade and convert them into spreadsheets because I can make them collaborative. And notice I just said the word because. That's really important as you start to use a digital tool. Why are you doing that? What's wrong with paper? And because I can personalize them. So if students put their name into a spreadsheet, I can take that cell that has their name and integrate it into all of the examples. So the whole kind of like Mad Libs. But so, you know, just put a little touch of choice and personalization on the activities. But I'm going through these activities. I'm like, man, these are great. Like, they're so good on paper. Like, they were designed for paper. They are awesome on paper. And I have no way to enhance or make them better by turning them into digital activities. A lot of U-cubed Joe Bowler. Joe Bowler and U-cubed are kind of synonymous. You know, I have a lot of their activities that I have made into spreadsheets and I've made digital, and I can give you a rationalization for every single one as to why does this increase student engagement? Why is it better on this digital tool? But that's not always the case. And so some things are, there's nothing wrong with them being on paper.
Yeah.
Use them.
Absolutely. I'm always encouraging. I love the intentionality around what you're suggesting, which is, if we're not doing it offline and we're choosing to do something online that could be done offline, why is it? How is it enhancing the learning? How is it allowing for more communication, collaboration? I think
One of the things I see so often in classrooms that kind of loops back to the engagement conversation is when I am coaching teachers or training teachers and observing a lesson happening, so often the technology is simply used to isolate learners. It's like, put on your headphones, do this practice program, put on your headphones, watch this video. And it's not like there's anything wrong with an online program or video, but there's all these missed opportunities to connect learners around shared tasks, which is what is exciting about what you're describing.
Write that phrase down. Connect learners around shared tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you made that point earlier about like so many people talk about student engagement, but we don't necessarily know how to do it. We know what it looks like. And that's what I hear when I talk to teachers. I'm like, what does engagement mean? And they'll describe the visual indicators of engagement. But it's like, what can you do when designing learning experiences to really engage students? And I think some of the points you made that are critical is that no matter what you do, one strategy, one learning activity, no matter how cool we think it is not going to engage every student. And so really finding out like, what do our students enjoy? Where are the online spaces that they're hanging out? What are their interests and hobbies and preferences? And keeping those things in mind and hopefully using them to design experiences that also allow that agency and choice. So whether it's a choice board or like a would you rather or choose your own adventure, like how are we setting them up to make key decisions about how they interact with content, how they process information, engage with each other? Are there other like strategies or tips when you're working with your teachers in the credential program that you suggest they try to kind of engage their learners?
Yeah, absolutely. Critical thinking is engaging, mm-hmm. right? You don't need clip art. And I've proven this 100 times over. There's two things that you need to do. One, it needs to be interesting. Like the question itself, the prompt itself, I teach maths, right? So a good math problem should not be, I know what the first step is. If that's your response, that's actually terror inducing. I've forgotten it. I don't even know what I put toast in to toast it sometime. Like, what's that thing you put toast in? You know, like when you're on the spot, you're like, that's fight or flight. It like, it goes out the window. So a really good question should start with, I don't know.
Yep.
Let me think about it. If you expect students to know what to do right away, it's low critical thinking. That's kind of my definition for DOK 1 and DOK 2. If you don't know DOK, that is depth of knowledge. There are 4 levels of critical thinking. It's not how hard it is. It's how complex the reasoning is. And I'm super passionate about DOK. And so giving a question that you don't expect them to get the right the first time, that they should get it wrong. Robert Kaplinsky is the master of this. He's like, look, if you get it right within 3 tries, you don't get credit. It's just changing the narrative. Thinking is engaging, but feeling dumb is not. So if you ask a critical thinking question and students think they're going to get points marked off for thinking, they're going to be risk averse. They're not going to want to try. It's terror inducing. They're afraid about their grade. They're afraid about looking dumb in front of their peers. So if you read the book Mathematical Mindsets by Joe Bowler, which is not about math, it's just a book about teaching, highly recommend, is creating that culture in your class where students like volunteer their errors instead of saying who has the answer, who wants to share their mistakes.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Because when you make a mistake, your brain grows. It's a much more interesting conversation to say, you were thinking, let's analyze your thinking rather than you're dumb, you didn't get it right, you should have known this. Mm-hmm. So it's just really changing the perspective of how we do it in class. So I do more critical thinking questions with a lower risk of failure. Mm-hmm. Those have to be combined together. So I tell my students, you can never get the right answer and still get an A in my class.
Yeah, no, it's all about the process.
So, I was this last year, I was covering for a friend who's on sabbatical. So I was teaching in the Masters of Math Education. So my students for this last year were teachers, right? So they're getting a master's in math. They mostly math majors. They're current practicing math teachers. And I'm like, I just want you to have a different experience of what it's like to do a math lesson. You know, so we start every class with a really interesting math problem. I had one, it was a parabola, it's a U shape, and then it had a circle inside of it where just the edge of the circle was touching the parabola, we call that tangent. Mm-hmm. And then it was shaded below the circle and above the U shape. Doesn't that sound engaging? That's so exciting, right, Catelyn? So exciting. There was no clip art. There was no clip art. But, you know, you look at that and you don't be like, oh, I know what to do. You're like, I'm not sure what to do. Mm-hmm. Let me think about it. My students were literally like, I couldn't sleep for 3 days just trying to figure this out. And I had posted the YouTube video of how to solve it. Oh, so I mean, they could have just looked at it. Mm-hmm. It's engaging to want to think. And so, you know, I assigned for them to tell me what was their strategy. I don't tell them, assign them to give me their answer. I assign them to give me their strategy. Show me your thinking. If you're demonstrating that you're thinking, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you full credit.
Yep. No, I love that. I love that. There's a strategy that I encourage teachers to use when they're facilitating small group instruction, whether it's like pulling small groups out while the rest of the class is working on something, or maybe a teacher-led station and a station rotation. And the strategy is what I call hook the group. And it's doing exactly what you're saying, which is instead of leading with the instruction or the modeling, right? Which is basically telling students how to do something or showing them how to do something.
The thinking for them.
Yeah, exactly. And instead, you start with an unfamiliar problem, task, or challenge, and you can pair them up for support, create smaller groups of learners, but like let them wrestle with it. Because the most frustrating thing I encountered as a high school teacher, honestly, was when kids would hit something they didn't know, they just threw their hands in the air and they were like, I don't know how to do this. And I was like, do you know?
And then they claim that you're not doing your job.
Right. You're not spoon feeding me, Tucker. Something's wrong here. And I'm like, do you know how much stuff in life you're not going to know how to do? You're going to have to think critically, problem solve, lean on your resources, have a conversation with somebody else. And so the hook the group lets them kind of wrestle with that new thing, figure out what old strategies have we used in the past that might work here? What questions do we have? And while they're working, the teacher is just listening and observing. Where are the gaps? Where are the misconceptions? Where are the strong strategies being used? So that when it comes time to debrief, and like you're saying, let's share our mistakes, let's share our thinking with the group, then we follow with instruction and the actual modeling so that now kids care about that explanation, right? They've had to sit in that space of productive struggle. So I love this idea of like, let's focus on critical thinking and let's try to cultivate a culture in our classroom where students are they feel safe making mistakes, mm-hmm. and they understand that mistakes are just part of learning and really should be celebrated and discussed.
Learning is engaging. Who doesn't want to learn? I believe in my core that kids would rather learn than eat. So if they are not wanting to learn, I would like to argue they're not wanting to lose points. They're not wanting to look dumb. It's not the learning that they're averse to. It's right. The game of school, that which is honestly a pretty poorly designed game.
Yeah. It's a game a lot of them probably wouldn't play unless they had to.
James Paul Gee, he wrote some book about English and video games. He's a professor in Arizona, I believe. And he said, school is the only place where you read the entire game manual and you never play the game.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
So you talk about student engagement. What do you do when you play a game? Like, we play games because they're engaging. Who reads the directions? No, you get in and you die. That's how you learn how to play a game, right?
Yep.
And what keeps hooking you in is you keep dying. So I've been playing this stupid game called Tower Defense, and I can't even tell you how many hours I've played. Not only have I beaten the game, I went and downloaded their other version. So I keep playing this, and if each round takes me half an hour to die. It takes me half an hour to die. Why am I doing this? I have so many other things to do, but it is that Vygotsky zone of proximal development, that it's just above your ability level, but within your reach, right? Mm-hmm. It's a challenge. It's not a gimme that you're going to get the right answer. And what is my consequence when I do die? I do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a video game person. I know you have kids who like love video games. So I'm not surprised you also are super into them, but I'm like a total board game nerd. Like, we play board games on the weekends, the kids and me. And I often will like buy a new game, rip open the top, throw everything out on the table, and just like start figuring it out. And it isn't until I hit that spot where I'm like, something's not right. I know this isn't how this is supposed to go. That's the only time I'll grab that direction sheet and start looking through it, is because now I kind of need it to accomplish something that I care about.
Yeah, my son is very stoic. So for Christmas every year, I buy a whole bunch of games on sale. Like, you know, for Black Friday, I just buy a bunch of games. I don't care if we already have them, because there's nothing that'll start a family fight faster than the dice being missing. So, like, we're here to have family fun. And with five kids, there's nothing cheaper I can do than a brand new board game. Mm-hmm. Like, even if I took them to McDonald's for fries, it would cost me more than the price of a brand new board game. So I just buy Jenga over and over again. But my son, he reads all the directions in advance. So on Christmas Eve, when we have this day of games, there's my son telling us how to play these games. And I'm the worst. I'm the worst of the whole group, where I'm just like, can we just play? Let's just play. You know, and no one wants to sit around and listen to somebody explain it. What the satisfaction is in figuring it out.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. I think I was talking ages ago with Lisa Heifel on this podcast, and she put it so poignantly. She was just like, we just keep stealing all the aha moments from students, and they need these opportunities to like discover. And that's what, those are the sweet spots in education.
So I just was in Mexico a few days ago, and it surprised me. I was going to do a school visit. And then the night before, he's like, the students are really excited for you to come do the presentation. And I'm like, I'm doing a presentation tomorrow. I thought I was just like walking around talking to some administrators or whatever. Okay, what am I doing? He's like, you're going to do a lesson on fractions. Oh, cool. I'm sure that will be really engaging. Awesome. Thanks for that. So, like, okay, sixth graders whose native language is Spanish, and my Spanish is quite terrible. And I got to teach them fractions. Awesome. I'm using Minecraft. So I spent a ridiculous amount of the time that I had to prep is I created this whole activity in Minecraft because I want to engage. Step one. Wait, we have Minecraft today? No, you can't rest on your laurels and saying, oh, you have Minecraft, it's engaging. No. Nothing is a silver bullet or a gimme, but that is at least my hook, is instead of showing them a circle with little wedges cut out of it and thinking that they're going to care about that. Mm-hmm. And then how do I make it about the students? What are the students doing? So I know that they don't have Minecraft, which would have been nice if they could have had it on their own iPads, but I had a student come up to the front and they're navigating around in my little Minecraft world that just says, hey, we're going to be farming. And I have this garden and it's supposed to be 1/3 carrots. And right now it's not. So what are you going to have to rip out and plant so that it's 1/3 carrots? So we just get that started with one student kind of navigating around. That's not real exciting for everybody else.
Right.
So I took screenshots of the whole activity. So everyone's got a screenshot of what the garden looks like, but there's a context. Mm-hmm. It's a real context. Games are real. They're real to them. Mm-hmm. So I have this real context that I have this garden, and I took a screenshot of it and I put it into Mathagon, Polypad. Mm-hmm. And so every student has their own copy. So they get to actively engage and figure out this challenge. So I don't start by telling them how to find 1/3. I don't tell them that. I want them to figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. So they got to sketch it. They got to plan out how they're going to plant them. And so I go over and they've got like some scribble on there. I'm like, so what exactly is this scribble? They're like, it's the carrots, because it was carrots and potatoes. I'm like, you got to label that. I love is going around and seeing all the different ways that students visually represent it, because that is one of the things that is like core. How do I give a challenge where they have to have some level of creativity that what they do doesn't look exactly like their neighbor?
Yeah.
And that is one of my elements of student engagement, right? It's choice and creativity. Mm-hmm. And it's small choices, right? They get to choose how they draw the carrots. They get to choose how they're going to plant them. And then, of course, you want to have them communicate. How'd you do it? What's your strategy? Why is yours look different than your neighbor? So all those conversations feed into student engagement. So we had several of those. I'll tell you what, I've never had this happen before. At the end of the lesson, when time was up, the kids were mobbing me for my autograph.
Oh, that's adorable.
Like, maybe I should teach sixth graders more often. Ninth graders are a little more surly.
Oh, I know. I think they still kind of like you through middle school. You get to high school and they're like, okay.
Go to Mexico and teach sixth graders. This was awesome.
That was so great.
I did that demo lesson and then I got to go teach ninth graders, who not one asked me for my autograph, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
So on that one, again, I want to start with engage and explore. So before I tell them anything, they need to see that they need me to tell them something.
Right.
So I had, so they had already been doing a statistics unit where they've gathered data. So now what they need to do is take the data that they have and put it into a frequency table. So that was my charge, was to teach them how to make frequency tables. Well, here's what's not going to happen. I'm not going to stand up and make a chart and put numbers in it and like, look at me, make a frequency table. Now you do what I just did.
Right.
That's
right.
Not engaging. That is not engaging. And so, you know, what I do is I have a spinner in the Mathagon PolyPad, and this is why I use a digital tool, because it's interactive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So every student is able to do the activity. They're all just doing this spinner, right? They just keep clicking on it, it spins, and the wedges are different sizes. And I'm like, okay, well, how many times did it land on red? Were we supposed to be counting that? Right. Okay. See, like I tricked you. I'm like, okay, if you right click on the spinner, it says tabulate and it automatically counts for you. So, and that is the end of my words coming out of my mouth. I'm trying to use as few words as humanly possible to help them to figure out the activity. So now they're clicking the spinner and it's automatically counting up every time it lands in one of the quadrants. Fun to, you know, just keep clicking away.
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, now you're going to make your own spinner, right? So I'm looking for how are they going to do something creative that's different than their neighbor. So this is my design process. So the Mathagon has, you can do coins, you can do dice. If you just want to do a regular spinner, you can decide, click on it to add extra wedges, and then you can move the wedge so they're different sizes. And so I had probably 40 kids in this, in the room doing this activity. And as I was walking around, not one was doing the same thing as anybody else. One girl, she had six spinners and then she color coded them all. So you can go into the eyedropper and take the blue and make it five different shades of blue. And then on a different one, she did it five different shades of purple or three different shades of green. Like they were all different spinners, all different colors, color coded, all different numbers of wedges. She had a table for each one of them. And then she was going through clicking on each, like, first spinner, second spinner, third spinner, fourth spinner, like clicking on each one, creating these tables. I'm just like, he was just like so into this. Now, if I just had her like, hey, spin this and count some numbers, who's going to be into that?
Right.
We're really engaged. And then I had them figure out percentages, which as you can guess, didn't go awesome. but I'm not grading it, right? So it's like, okay, how do you do this? And we have the conversation. I didn't go up to the front and model how to do a percentage, right? Get it wrong. Talk with your neighbor. Let's talk about it together. The students who need a reminder, I remind them. Those who don't, they're doing great. They're all doing their spinners. So then I took a Google form. And of course I coded this. I took a Google form and I said, what is a frequency table? So instead of me telling them, I want them to explore and tell me. And their responses from the form automatically become a slide. You can use my Notice Wonder add-on to do something similar to this. So the Notice Wonder add-on for Google Forms will allow students to fill out the form, and then you can send those responses to Google Slides. You know, and their definitions were pretty good.
But yeah. You know what?
They were. You're displaying it up, and then we're sharing our mistakes. You're like, okay, look. If I were to say this to your mom says, post school today, what did you learn? And you said, I have some data and it's in an organization. Does that really explain it? Right? How do you communicate and explain your ideas, which is higher critical thinking and a much better skill than just being able to make the table?
Mm-hmm.
So I redid the question and I said, explain this to your mom.
Oh, I love that.
It was so great. All right. And so then we're displaying those up of how the kids were explaining it to their mom. I didn't need to explain how to do a frequency table. They all figured it out.
Wow.
It was amazing. And they were really into it.
That is amazing. And I will include if you want, Alice, a link to the Notice Wonder add-on in the show notes for this.
The Mathagon activities as well.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sure people would love that. So you've written a
ton of books at this point. You've explored Google, all the Google Suite, Google Classroom, and how teachers can really leverage those tools. So when you think about Google, Google Classroom, like, why has this been such an area of like passion for you? Like, I know you code all the time. Alice Keeler is the queen of spreadsheets. She loves a good spreadsheet. She can do things with spreadsheets I don't even understand, quite frankly. So I'm just curious what like drives your passion in this area, because I know it's something you spend a lot of time and energy on.
So your question is, Alice, why are you engaged with Google, right? Right. We're talking about student engagement, and I'm engaged with this. I think that all the same things we just said, right? I get to do critical thinking with Google tools. I get to be creative, and how I do a spreadsheet and how you do a spreadsheet or a Google Doc isn't going to be the same. I listen to what pain points people have, and I create templates and resources, and I get a lot of satisfaction out of being creative and making things and sharing and collaborating. I use Google tools because I can collaborate. Mm-hmm. So I am really, 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 really good with Office. And I gave up using Office when it was just Google Docs and Google Sheets. Like, slides didn't even exist. And I'm like, I'm not using Office anymore. Why? Because it's so much worse, right? It has a lot less features. You're dependent on the internet. And the answer is collaboration. Like, to me, the ability to interact with people and to share is better than any fancy features that anyone has. And so I've stuck with that. I am, fun fact, the only female Google developer expert for Google Workspace. That's wow. In the world. I'm sure that will change at some point. So I'm the only GDE for Google, meaning that I code Google Docs, Sheets, Slides, Google Classroom, and then I also am prolific at sharing and mentoring other people around it.
Yes, absolutely. If anybody is looking for anything related to Google, Alice Keeler should be your first stop for sure.
Thanks, I appreciate it. But you know, how do I get this award or whatever? Because I'm really not that good at coding. But what I am really good at is sharing, right? Like, is network and community around me, that's really what I value above other things. And so I'm really more recognized for wanting to work with people.
Yeah. And I love your point too, because I think one of the things we both have kind of a shared passion around is, you know, we know how complex and multifaceted this work is, and really helping teachers to lean on technology, whether it's, you know, the functionality of technology or integrating technology into a learning experience, to free teachers to kind of focus their time and energy on the aspects of this work that are most rewarding and engaging and exciting, instead of getting bogged down in the parts of this work that are really time consuming and frustrating and energy draining.
Yeah, you had asked me about work-life balance. I don't have any of that, but I do try to help others have that. I'm always looking for what is taking you a long time. So my husband teaches English. He's not paying attention to me because he's having to, you know, grade essays. He stupidly assigned the students to write a paragraph in a Google Doc. Sucker, you got to open all of those. And that's slow. Like, I literally would rather have paper to look at those documents, right? So I sat down and I coded alicekeeler.com/pull-the-paragraph. Mm-hmm. And so what that allows you to do is, if you can get all the student Google Docs into a single folder in Drive. Now, if you use Google Classroom, it automatically does that. Otherwise, you just have to get them in a folder. So then what it'll do is it'll pull all the text out of the Google Docs into a spreadsheet like they'd filled out a Google form. So I can read all of the students' responses in one place without opening any of the Google Docs. I can give feedback in the spreadsheet, and it pushes it either to the top or the bottom of their Google Docs. So here's how you should decide. Is it autopsy feedback?
End of the process. You're dealing with a product nobody's going to work with again.
Right. So when you're given that autopsy feedback, you're done. I put it at the top.
Okay.
It's the first thing they see. So I push the feedback at the top. If it's formative feedback that they're supposed to respond to the feedback, I put it at the bottom. So, because we're in the process, because then I can run the pull the paragraph add on again, and then it's going to pull my feedback. Mm-hmm. So those are at least the paragraphs at the end. So I don't have to start by reading my own feedback.
Oh, okay. I love that.
It really facilitates the ability to do a feedback loop and save you a lot of time, right? So that's my jam. Like, how do we give better feedback, interact more with students, and not just be slogged in digital paperwork? How can I help you with that?
Yeah, no, I love that. I think often when we're coming in and working with teachers, at least from my experience, you know, you have the go-getters who are really excited. You don't have to convince them. They're totally game and on board. But then you have a lot of other teachers who are hesitant or really reluctant to learn whatever it is I'm coming in to teach them. And so I always start with, like, what are the pain points and how can what we're talking about help to mitigate, at the very least, if not eliminate, some of those pain points. So I love that. And I'm going to push back. So everybody listening, I shared the questions with Alice before our conversation. And I always, as people who listen to this podcast know, end the podcast by asking, like, how do you attempt to strive for work-life balance? What tips do you use that have worked? And Alice literally said, I don't have any. I don't have any tips. And I was dying laughing. But I do know, because we are connected on social, so I get to see Alice and pictures of her family. I see her, like, mastering things like the Instapot, which I do know help create a little life balance. So how do you make time for this amazing 5-kid husband family when you are traipsing all over the globe, working with teachers everywhere around kind of student engagement, technology, Google tools, all the stuff that you are so incredibly gifted at kind of training teachers around? Because I know you do that.
I years ago got some advice that when you go home to play board games with your kids, that was from you. So no, but literally, right. And this is something I quote in a lot of my keynotes and presentations that I do. I say, Catelyn Tucker is an English teacher and she gives feedback to kids' face. She doesn't go home and sacrifice time with her kids. She goes home and plays board games with them.
This is true. You know,
and now that my oldest daughter is 19 and my son graduates from high school on Friday, now I'm going to start crying. Mm-hmm. I don't get that time back.
No, I know.
I don't get it back. My youngest is 10. I had 5 kids. I thought I could stretch this out forever. But there's a point where they don't need you anymore and they can cook their own pork chops on the stove. Yeah. So when my kids come to me and say, Mom, you know, can we play a game? Mom, can we play with matches? That's my middle one. Believe me, if she wants to play with matches, we're going to do it together, because otherwise she's going to do it by herself. but the thing that I learned is I'm not going to get that back. And so there's nothing I'm doing that's more important than taking that moment. I don't care how busy I am. I don't care how much grades that I have to do. I don't care what it is I'm going to just spend time with my kids. So my work-life balance, I guess, which I don't have, is I get up at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. because my kids are sleeping.
Yeah, no, actually, I think I'm more of a fiver, like 5 o'clock person, but I love that, because I was just sharing with Alice before we started recording, because she was talking about her kids and having 2 basically off in college next year. And I said, my oldest is going to be a junior next year and the time just flies. So yes, work is busy. Yes, life is hectic, especially those of us juggling, you know, families and careers, but you don't get that time back. So just, even if it's just being present in the moment and carving out a little time for those people who we love that are in our lives, is, I think that's a great tip. And I'm so glad we pulled it out of you, Alice. Thank you so much for joining me. It was so fun getting to chat with you about all of these different topics. And I will have all of Alice's information in the show notes so you can follow her and connect. All right. Thank you again. There are so many moments in this conversation that for me really resonate, but I will say Alice's examples, where she kept highlighting how different students approach different math tasks in just totally unique ways, really reinforces the reality that kids are so different from one another, and that if our true goal is to engage students in active learning in the classroom, we need to create opportunities for them to be creative, to bring their own unique perspective to an assignment or a task, to have the flexibility and freedom to approach a task in a particular way. And I also just loved the point about how we need to normalize failure and making mistakes and actually celebrate those moments as really interesting opportunities to learn. But unfortunately, in the traditional school system, there's so many points and grades attached to everything thing that it can make it feel very scary to fail, to make a mistake. And so how do we kind of reimagine the way we build our classroom culture so students understand that mistakes just present more opportunities to learn, and we should be sharing, discussing, and working with our mistakes to figure out how we do something better in the future. So I love that takeaway as well. Thank you for joining me for this conversation. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on my website, katelyntucker.com, Twitter at @Katelyn_Tucker, or on Instagram at @KatelynTucker. If you want to connect with Alice Keeler, you can find her on Twitter at @AliceKeeler. And I will include all of the resources that Alice mentioned in the podcast in the show notes below. So thank you again for joining.